Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Cook it, serve it up just right. Cook it, loving's out of sight.
Michael Pollan's new book, Cooked, follows the twists and turns of his education in the kitchen, organizing his journey around the four classical elements, fire, water, air, and earth. Pollan apprentices himself to a series of culinary experts to discover how these elements can transform the stuff of nature into delicious things that we eat and drink. The effects of not cooking are similarly far-reaching. Relying on industry to process our food means we consume huge quantities of fat, sugar, salt, and novel chemicals with devastating effects on our health and well-being. It also transforms us from producers into consumers increasingly dependent on corporations and commercial interests. Cook argues that taking back control of cooking may be the single most important step anyone can take to help make the American food system healthier and more sustainable. Michael Pollan is the author of six previous books, including Food Rules, In Defense of Food, The Omnivore's Dilemma, and The Botany of Desire, all New York Times bestsellers. A longtime contributor to the New York Times, he's also the Knight Professor of Journalism at Berkeley and a dear friend of this radio program. And it's a pleasure to welcome back Michael Pollan. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Joe. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. Always nice to hear from you. So this book is, as always, ever delightful and insightful and incredible. You started to think about this part of the process when?
Well, you know, I've been working on the food chain, following the food chain in my work for about 10 years now. And in Omnivore's Dilemma, I looked at the earth end of the food chain, where the food comes from as we take it out of the earth. And then I leapt ahead and looked at the body end of the food chain to look at what it does to us when we ingest it. But over time, I came to realize that the middle link of the food chain, which I had sort of taken for granted, the places where we transform produce from farms into meals, had the largest influence of all over the whole system. So, for example, the kinds of foods we grow and how we grow them is very much dictated by the way we're eating. And it was when we industrialized our eating and moved toward a fast food economy that we industrialized our agriculture, because McDonald's and all those companies wanted a certain kind of potato and a certain kind of meat at a certain price point. And this drove, the way we're eating drove what happened on the farm. And then on the other side, as I learned about nutrition when I was writing In Defense of Food, I learned that nutrients really weren't the key to eating well, nutrients good or bad, and that the key really was, were you eating real food? And, you know, corporations don't know how to cook real food very well. They tend to dress it up with way too much salt, fat, and sugar, and lots of additives that no normal person keeps in their pantry. And as you said in your setup, I discovered that the most important thing about our diet is who is cooking it. Is it being cooked by a human being, or is it being cooked by a corporation? And if it's being cooked by a corporation, chances are you're going to be struggling with chronic disease and obesity, because their methods of transformation simply are not conducive to human health.
What I always love about your writing and your books is that you take a huge topic and you break it down and put it into a way for us to understand it. And this book follows your journey on learning how to barbecue, bake bread, stew and braise, and ferment. What was it about those four particular cooking skills that you could use as a springboard to give us a rather full picture of what we're talking about?
Well, you're right. I mean, it is the way I like to work. I like to, when I'm addressing a big topic, is like get back to first principles, you know,
right,
drive it into a corner and see what really makes it tick. And with cooking, I realized that almost every dish, no matter what tradition, involves one of four primal transformations, each of which is kind of a technology that were invented by people thousands of years ago. So they happen to correspond to the classical elements. So in fire, which is the oldest and simplest method of cooking, I went and apprenticed myself to a pit master in North Carolina named Ed Mitchell and learned about whole hog barbecue, which is the style in eastern North Carolina. And it's pretty unreconstructed cooking. It's, you know, pig plus wood plus fire plus time, and that's it, and a lot of time. And then I leapt ahead to the next big technology in cooking, which was cooking in pots. And that doesn't happen until about 10,000 years ago when we developed ceramic pottery that we could put over a fire and boil water in and other liquids. And then you could do amazing new things you couldn't do over an open fire. You could combine plants with animals. You could create sauces instead of losing a lot of nutrients onto the fire. You could soften grain and seeds, which otherwise were almost inedible. And that allowed you to feed old people and really young people. You didn't need teeth to eat suddenly, which vastly expanded the human lifespan. And allowed women to wean babies earlier. And then air is baking. And bread, which is invented about 6,000 years ago, is a very powerful technology. You could not survive on flour, even whole wheat flour. You can survive on bread. And that's because the process of both fermenting the dough and baking it in this pressure cooker, which is really what a loaf of bread is. The crust becomes seals it in so it can steam, and it gets hotter than boiling water and allows you to break down all the nutrients in these grass seeds and make them incredibly nutritious. I know bread has a bad rep, but it's actually a very healthy food when it's properly cooked. And then earth. Every culture has worked with fermentation, using microbes rather than heat to cook our food. And that's really important because it gives you a method of preservation, and it was the key method of preservation of food before refrigeration. Because when you ferment food, basically these lactic acid bacteria transform part of the sugars in the food into acids that protect it from decomposition. And so you can keep fermented food around without refrigeration for, you know, it gets you through the year. Not to mention the fact that you can use fermentation to create alcohol, which is one of the great blessings of civilization. So those are the four, and I think most cooking can be divided, regardless of culture, can be divided into those four transformations. And in each case, I found a master to teach me how to perform that transformation.
And you make this point in the book beautifully that so many of us, the average American, if you will, only has a small handful of cooking techniques and technologies at our ready, and that because of that, not only is there a loss of knowledge and that food becomes abstracted from its context, but we also, you have a great loss of power as well.
Yeah, you know, your diet is one of the most important things about your life and your health and your family's health. And we've given up control to corporations who want to cook for us. And, you know, the way you create new markets in a capitalist economy is you insinuate yourself further and further into the space of private life. And corporations have been trying to get in our kitchen for more than 100 years, and they were resisted for a very long time. We only succumbed in the last 30 years or so, and that's a story that I tell in the book also. But you know, corporations would be happy to reach down your throat and digest your food if they could find a profitable way to do it. But the problem is that they just don't have our best interests at heart. They want to. Their business model involves processing food as much as possible, which tends to make it less healthy, not more healthy. And they're fundamentally dedicated to really cheap raw ingredients, and also their goal is not to satisfy us, it's to stimulate our cravings. They cook very differently than your mom or your dad did. They actually manipulate your cravings, your dopamine network, and that's why they're so enamored of salt, fat, and sugar. And Michael Moss has made this case very well in his new book, Salt, Fat, and Sugar, or Salt, Sugar, and Fat. And whereas when your mom or your dad's cooking for you, they want to satisfy you. They don't want to create endless cravings. But if you're in the food industry, which is a very low-margin industry in a world where the population in America is not growing very quickly, the way you make more money is get heavy users of food to consume more of it. And that's what their marketing is about, and that's what their food science is about. So, you know, you're being manipulated, and in ways that are not conducive to your health. And taking back control of your diet is the single most important thing you can do to improve your health, and not to mention the well-being of your family, because cooking and family dinner are very closely tied. As we move to corporate cook food, we move toward eating alone and eating while doing other things, what's called secondary eating. The USDA tracks this relatively new activity. It's eating while doing other things. And we now spend 78 minutes a day engaged in secondary eating. I saw someone eating and jogging at the same time the other day in Central Park. You know, we eat while we're in the car. We eat while we're watching TV. We eat while we're working.
Right.
And that means we're not engaged in primary eating, which is the new word for what we used to call meals. And meals are really important. It's where our kids learn to share. It's where they learn the art of conversation. It's where they learn the skills of democracy, how to argue without giving offense, how to listen. And we're giving that up. And one of the reasons we're giving it up is because we're not cooking.
And the most common argument, I assume, that you hear, that we hear as a culture, that you hear as you're going out and talking about this book, I assume, in the 2 minutes that we have left, is the issue of time.
Yes. Well, we do have a time crunch. We work way too hard in this society, and we all need to work now to support, you know, wages. Family wages have been falling, and so women are working and men are working, and it is a challenge. But I encourage people to question the whole cult of convenience food. One of the things we did for this book, my family did a microwave night where we all got those microwavable single-serving entrees, you know, the bags of stir-fry, and I got a curry, and my wife got a lasagna, and my son got a French onion soup gratiné. You try getting that on the table. You have to microwave it. And the microwave is a highly individualistic appliance. You can only do one entree at a time. It took us 40 minutes to get this meal on the table. Because by the time the last one came out of the microwave, the first one was cold and had to be nuked again. We never actually all sat down at the same time. We were always getting up to check on our convenience food. It was incredibly disjointed, ridiculous family meal. And by the way, it didn't taste very good. So, you know, convenience food sometimes takes a lot of time. But my larger point is we always make time for the things we value, for the things we deem important. We make time to get to the gym because we know how important it is to our health and our sanity. And my argument is that this is just as important to your health and your sanity. It's an opportunity to reconnect with your senses, being in the kitchen. It's an opportunity to disconnect from screens and electronics. And for me, it's where I do restore my mental balance at the end of every day. And, you know, it's a great pleasure. And, you know, whether you look at it as drudgery or pleasure is really all in your head. And this book, I hope, is an argument from pleasure, and that will change the way you look at that work.
And I really do. I mean, growing up in a large family, I love what you have to say about, you know, at mealtime and getting together and having those conversations, because it's
the nursery of democracy. I really believe that.
Really incredible. The book is amazing. It is Cooked, A Natural History of Transformation. It is published by the Penguin Press. Michael Pollan, it is always a delight to have you on the program. I wish you nothing but success and luck with this. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Cooked. It is published by the Penguin Press. Michael Pollan is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.